Hi, I'm David Bloomberg.
And I'm Liana Boris.
And we're the respective hosts of the Survivor podcasts, Why Blank Lost,
and the RHAP B&B, here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups.
Former Survivor player Jessica Lewis and I break down what the latest person voted out did compared to my rules for winning the game. You may remember Jessica from Millennials vs. Gen X, where she got eliminated in a rock draw that was a little tense.
Yes,
And I've been covering Survivor for so long that even Rob Cesternino took a copy of the rules with him to study before his season.
Over at the B&B, Survivor journalist Mike Bloomberg and I get into some Survivor fun and games. Each week, a special guest checks in to break down island fashion or answer important questions like, can a baby win Survivor? Make sure you don't miss out on an episode of either one of our podcasts by subscribing to the RHAP Survivor Only podcast feed or the Reality TV Wrap-Ups podcast feed. David, is it in your rules for people to listen to our podcast?
It is now.
From my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's the mayor of Ponderosa. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast here. Going to talk with the great Chaos Cast on our recap podcast this week. Talk about everything that's going on. Really excited to get Cass back on the podcast to talk about everything from this wild episode of Survivor. We're going to have some really interesting tribal councils and big blindsides, a lot of memorable moments so far in season 39 of Survivor. So we'll have Cass coming up with us in just a couple of minutes. Of course, Rick Devins last night did a great job filling in on the Survivor know-it-all. Got the chance to talk with Jack Nichting as well in our exit interview, and I thought that he was very fun to talk to. If you missed any of that, this weekend I'm going to have our feedback show coming up with Sierra Easton. Really looking forward to getting some feedback questions from you, the person listening to this podcast, on this weekend's show. So get those in. rob@website.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP as we get ready for another busy feedback show. Before we get to Chaos Cast, let me take a moment and thank a sponsor for this episode of the podcast so we don't have to take any interruptions as we're talking with Cass. Those are our friends over at Purple Mattress. Of course, anybody who has had a bad night's sleep knows how much more focused you are and locked in when you've had a good night's sleep. And instead of tossing and turning, why don't you turn to the people over at Purple? The founder of Purple are two brothers who have been developing cushioning technology for 30 years on things like medical beds and wheelchairs. These two brothers, not named Aris and Vetus, in 2016, they decided to use their patented comfort technology to create Purple, the world's most scientific mattress. Now, how's Purple different from other mattresses? Well, the Purple mattress was going to feel different than anything you've ever experienced before because it uses a brand new material that was developed by an actual rocket scientist, not Dave Johnson, and it was not like the memory foam that you're going to be used to. The Purple mattress material feels very unique because it's both firm and soft at the same time, so it keeps everything supported while still being very comfortable. Plus, it's breathable and it sleeps cool. It ends up giving you a zero gravity feel, like it will work in any sleeping position. So for a 100 night risk-free trial, if you're not fully satisfied, you can return your mattress with a full refund backed by a 10-year warranty, free shipping and returns, free in-home setup, and old mattress removal. You're going to love Purple, and right now our listeners will get a free Purple pillow with the purchase of a mattress. That's in addition to the great free gifts they're offering site-wide. Just text the word ROB to 84888. The only way to get the free pillow is to text ROB to 84888. That's ROB to 84888. Message and data rates may apply. All right, everybody, let's bring in our guest today. And I am so excited whenever she agrees to come on and talk with us about everything that's going on Survivor and everywhere else. She, I believe today, is going to be making her eighth appearance here on Rob Has a Podcast, not counting when we've done exit interviews. Here she is, the great legend of the game. Please welcome back Chaos Cass McEwen. Cass, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. Thanks for having me. I always love to come here. I didn't realize it had been eight times.
Yeah, it's been so long. And I'm so glad that we still get to do this, Cass. I'm very excited whenever you say yes to this sort of thing, because we started on such a, we had like such a rocky relationship to start, I feel like.
Well, you do traditionally say I'm going to be the first out for a variety of reasons. And I'm hoping we're past that, but, you know, whatever. I'm over it.
Did I say that on Second Chances, too, that I thought you'd be the first one out?
Yes, I think I'm the only person, two for two, that you've ever predicted to be out first. So there, I should get the little ding for that.
Yeah, there you go. I'll give you two. But you look, at least you get to say, hey, you moron, you thought I was going to get out early, and then I didn't.
Yeah, so I don't think it was that rocky our start. Yeah. Was it that rocky? Or were you just uncomfortable because maybe, you know?
No, I think that you, well, I think it was definitely awkward, that I think that you felt like that, was talking too much about the Tony and the Spencer of it all way back when, but then you came to my house and then we had, such a nice chat that day.
Oh yeah. I gave you that t-shirt with Tony.
I still have it. I still have the Tony t-shirt. Oh, yeah. All right. So, and now here we are, with the Survivor Island of the Idols and everything that's going on. Before we talk Survivor, how's everything going with you, Cass?
Everything's great. I'm living in Texas. Actually, I just got told today that I'm approved to become an official graduate faculty member at Texas Tech University.
Oh, wow.
So apparently I'm some sort of academic now.
Yeah. What do you teach at Texas Tech University?
I teach about renewable energy law and policy. So,
oh, wow.
You know, but like wind and solar development, mostly some issues around that, you know, impacts of that financially, economic, you know, all sorts of impacts and laws. Funds. Yeah. It's kind of boring, but it's, you know, I like to geek out about it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the field is definitely interesting, even if, you know, it might not be exciting to everybody.
Well, in California, you guys know if you want any energy you can get, right?
So. Yeah. Yeah. We'll hope that I don't have a blackout during this podcast at any point either. So, yeah, we're all in favor of that. So, Cass, how are you feeling? I mean, the last time that we talked, you talked about how that you were potentially that you were getting a pacemaker and that you had had some health issues. Are you doing okay?
Yeah, you know, crazy enough, that's been 18 months ago. I got a pacemaker. I just found out on Halloween that it's very possible I never needed one.
Oh no.
So I'm kind of, I'm in this state of limbo. I'm waiting to get a third opinion, because obviously nobody wants a battery in their chest and wires in their heart. They don't need it.
Yeah.
So I feel great. I've actually been running, exercising. I feel better than I have in years, and just randomly went in to get a second opinion because I felt pretty good and didn't understand why I needed this thing. And then somebody said, well, you didn't. So actually, 1 week ago today, a doctor turned my pacemaker off, and here I am. So
yeah,
it's an interesting thing to be going through right now, but I feel great. So
yeah. Could they take it out or they just wouldn't make it operational?
Well, we're going to leave it off for 2 months and then, you can take the battery pack out, but because the wires have been in my heart for so long, they're now kind of part of my heart because everything, you know, kind of grows into the muscle there. So that would be super risky to take those out. So I might just be partially wired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm not sure where that's going, but I am feeling much better. And obviously psychologically, it's very interesting to learn. You may not have needed a heart procedure that you got. So, yeah. So that's another, I'll cross that bridge when I have to, but, it's good. Okay. All good right now.
Well, Cass, let me ask you about what's going on with Survivor. And I thought this was a really wild episode last night. I really thought Jamal was about to go home. And then it turns out that it was Jack. Let me ask you about the move that Kelly made. Did you like this big, bold, aggressive move from Kelly?
I'm trying to wrap my head around it. I feel like she was a little bit like Chaos Kelly last night. Like, you know, it was exciting and it was interesting, but what in the long term, I don't understand how it benefits her because she's put pretty much everything on Dean now, right? Dean, now Detective Dean is in charge of the fate of Kelly because if he goes and tells anybody,
right?
You know, that's uncovering a big mystery on the tribe and that's what Detective Dean's all about. So what interest does he have to keep that secret? He has absolutely no interest. And keeping that secret, he can build bonds by telling that secret.
Yeah.
And he only destroys one bond when he tells it, but he probably gains five.
Right.
So I think she gave him way too much power in doing that. And I don't understand who she's exactly in an alliance with other than Dean. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
I think a lot's going to go on at this merge. This merge is going to be very chaotic. I'm going to love it.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty wild merge, certainly. Yeah, it seemed like that Kelly, she had this relationship with Dean. And then it also seemed from a couple episodes ago that she had something at least going on with Karishma, where it felt like, okay, that she's like, well, maybe if I could protect these two people, and maybe I don't have to get rid of somebody who... is one of my allies. And so she started thinking about like, who's somebody that is tighter with other people. But I think that you're right, that Dean, I feel like, is very incentivized to spill the beans on this sort of thing, because that Kelly's figuring, okay, Dean is going to be a target once we get to the merge. Well, if Dean can get the target on Kelly, I think that that serves him.
I think Dean's going to be a free agent. What are his connections? He was already on the outs when he swapped. Mm-hmm. He's going into the merge. We just had a bunch of people vote for him. He has no loyalty whatsoever. And if I were Dean, I would just throw her under the bus and try to start building some loyalty with people.
Yeah.
Rather than have one person I'm loyal to and who's loyal to me.
Why not?
Almost everyone at the merge has voted for Dean.
Yeah.
So he's the quintessential free agent at this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even if he was loyal to Kelly, do you buy that Dean could be, keep his story straight and be able to sell this lie to everybody?
Yeah. I don't think many people talk to Dean, as we saw. People are very indifferent to him, so I don't know where Dean's going to fit in all this, but he certainly has a ton of power over Kelly right now.
Yeah.
And also, if Dean is, what's the relationship? He dated a friend of Kelly's.
Yeah. Well, I think one of her really good girlfriends that Dean had dated for a while.
So Dean probably is not in contact with this friend, this former girlfriend, because people usually don't, mm-hmm. Remain on good terms or talk regularly. So he has zero interests outside the game in protecting this relationship, because their paths are probably never going to cross again. Mm-hmm. Because it was an ex-girlfriend of his. It's a current friend of Kelly's. So he doesn't care if he pisses off his ex-girlfriend.
Right.
So I don't see any reason why you would put so much faith in the guy that almost everyone's voted against, has no connections, and really, even outside the game, that connection is tenuous at best. It's just insane to me.
Do you think that part of the decision on Kelly's part was that, this is the last night I have to use the idol? It's almost like you have a coupon for a store that's about to expire. And so you go there and then end up buying a bunch of stuff that you didn't need because you didn't want the coupon to go to waste.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is a pressure for every player. You got to make the moves. But when you have an idol, it's either you're going to go home with it, it's going to be incorrectly played, or it's going to be correctly played. Not many people just let it expire.
Mm-hmm.
How many times does that happen? You'll have to have your fact checker check it. But we haven't really had an idol expire.
Yeah.
And someone go, whatever. But there is a pressure because you have that coupon, you have a special power. Nobody likes to let their powers run out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm sure there was a pressure. How do I use this? I don't need to use it, but I have to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's definitely pressure when you have an idol that you need to use it in some way, even if it's a foolish way.
Yeah. So, Cass, I went back this morning and I went back and watched one of your old episodes, and I had so much fun. I went back to the Second Chance season to watch. I watched the last episode before the merge in Survivor Second Chances, and Cass, it was, I was laughing. It was so fun to see everybody back. I was dying when in the reward challenge, you went toe to toe with Stephen Fishback. Do you remember this?
I remember because I made him throw his, I made him scream and miss his toss because I jumped up in front of him. Was that shown on the show?
Well, that you guys had to get slathered in oil and then slide down the slip and slide and then throw the ring onto the ring toss. And Stephen was missing by a mile on that.
But I don't think they showed on the show whenever Stephen would be concentrating to start that throw. And you can confirm this with him. I literally twice jumped at him and made him screech and jump and throw his thing. And people were dying laughing. So you got to ask him that about me interfering with his tosses in between when I would go to pick mine up and he was tossing. I would just be like, and he'd be like, and then he'd throw it crazily. But it is great that I did.
It was great. And Jeremy was yelling at him, Steve, you got to be confident, man. Come on. That was great. But the reason why I watched that episode was because here you were. I feel like in a similar situation where you end up making a very, you know, a bold move, which was not, you know, to the liking of Andrew Savage right before you get to the merge where you worked with Sierra and with Spencer and with Abby Maria to blindside Savage and Kelly and take out Wu at this point. And I feel like that potentially, I think we're going to see a scenario where if this information gets out that Kelly took out somebody that was part of the big alliance when she had the opportunity, that I feel like that this is going to be very bad for Kelly come the merge.
Yeah, I think if there's a Savage-like character on there, it will be really bad.
Yeah.
You know, someone who's very vengeful, who flips off challenges, things like that. But, you know, that at that point in Cambodia, I didn't really have any power to do anything. I mean, I was left with it. I could have been a swing vote. Mm-hmm. But, you know, personally, I wanted Savage out at that time because he was more dangerous having those connections. Abby wouldn't go along with it and she wanted Wu. So everybody said, oh, we'll get Wu this time and we'll get Savage next time. And then we had the merge. And
The merge kinda snuck up on you.
The merge came early.
Yeah.
And or earlier than traditionally, mm-hmm. you know, we're used to. Now we're used to that merge.
Okay.
But at the time we weren't. So, yeah, I mean, I think things could, I think it's really going to backfire on her. And Dean, that's his only play is to throw her under the bus because he's going to be a target.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no interest for him to keep that secret, to have one ally. And it's an ally who's not really aligned with many people.
So Cass, just to go back to Cambodia for a moment, so that you guys knocked out Wu, was the plan then to have thrown the next challenge and then taken out Savage?
I don't think we were planning to throw a challenge or anything. I think, we were just trying to get the upper hand mm-hmm. going into whatever would come next. You know, I don't think it was, I know I've never had to throw a challenge, but mm-hmm. I don't think that was on anybody's mind about throwing a challenge. It was more like, let's get through this and let's get this big person out who has these ties.
Mm-hmm.
And then that when Abby wouldn't go along with it, we said, okay, how about Wu? He has just as many ties over there. Well, he didn't have as many ties, but, when one of your people is adamant, you kind of sometimes have to just go with that and hope for the best.
Cass, and you had to do it the old fashioned way that you couldn't just anonymously give an idol to Spencer on the beach and then say, hey, by the way, that the plan is to vote you out tonight, that you had to actually go and round up the votes.
I actually had to go talk Spencer into trusting me.
Mm-hmm.
And going with that. That is the old fashioned way, I guess.
Yeah. And but similarly, where Kelly had to go tell Dean, by the way, it's you tonight. That was similar to how you had to go and give Spencer the news. Hey, by the way, you're the one who's going to get voted out tonight. And he's like, oh, no, that, you know, Andrew, I thought Andrew Savage likes me. It's like, yeah, well, that you're getting voted out tonight unless you work with us.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an interesting. I haven't watched that episode, and I don't think about it regularly. But
it was really fun. We can talk more about the food challenge and everything later on. But let's stick with Island of the Idols for a little bit. Yes, I want to ask you about all of this conversation that unfolded about the idea of the Women's Alliance. And I think that from your time playing the game, you know, you've been somebody who has spoken a lot about, you know, the gender differences between how people are portrayed on the show and in the game. What did you make of that conversation from Tribal Council last night?
Well, I thought it was really great. I love Janet. I actually have her in my survivor pool. I don't think she's going to win, but I really like her. You know, some of the things that were said, both by the women and by Jeff, I thought it was more of a reflection of an evolution of Jeff Probst and the production mm-hmm. than of the women making this epiphany. I think women on the show have been saying these things for years. Mm-hmm. And I think, as I've said before, the majority of production and the crew is male, and they're finally hearing that.
Yeah.
And I think it's great all this was said, and I think it is true. You know, whenever we look at any group based on their gender or their race or their, you know, any type of cultural thing and say, oh, they're going to be an alliance, that is wrong. And that's something everybody does, right? Whether it's gender, race, any type of preference or orientation, politics, you know, anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's just natural. We lump people together. And on Survivor, everyone always has a great fear of the Women's Alliance. You don't see much of a fear of the brochachos, you know, right. emerging, but it's almost a given that the alpha males are going to stick together. You know, these are all generalizations we make. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was more interesting where Jeff said it was a seismic cultural shift in the way we view gender. And I, you know, and he was trying to make this broad statement, but I thought it's actually a seismic shift in the way men view gender, mm-hmm. in my opinion, in general, that they're starting, you know, we all have to look at each other like Elaine, like Janet was saying, you know, just as individuals rather than everything else. But for me, the epiphany I had was, you know, we all know Jeff wants to be a talk show host, right? At heart, that's been his life goal. He had the show, didn't work out for him. He's always tried to force these social issues, and it's come off poorly in a lot of instances, mm-hmm. right? Where maybe he's tried to lead the tribal council in a direction that he thinks is going to, you know, be able to tackle an issue. This is the first time I think we've seen Jeff, rather than force an agenda and force people to talk about something uncomfortable or to disallow a perspective he doesn't agree with, which I believe has happened in the past, he seems like he's more open-minded, and he might be realizing that he doesn't have to be Maury Povich. He can be Oprah Winfrey, mm-hmm. you know, in his talk show ways. So I think the big shift for me was him trusting the cast to be eloquent and speak well on issues. So I really thought of it not in terms of gender and bringing out social issues. I saw it as a huge shift in production, and kudos to them for being a little less shove it down our throat and letting the people speak for themselves rather than guiding the conversation.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's my, I also wondered if Jeff gave more deference because Janet and Jeff are in the same age group, right? And he's used to being the boss. And he's not used to having someone his age there to have an intelligent discussion with him. And maybe he just internally has more deference for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe he's respecting this cast a little more. So that was my feeling on it. I agree with what the women say. You know, I agreed with stuff that happened last week. I love how this cast is thoughtful, you know, and perceptive about these things. And it's not all arguing and anger. So maybe that's a shift culturally, but I also think production pushes that a lot. So I say congratulations to Jeff and crew for kind of evolving, which they've needed to do for a long, long time. So, and showing this in the manner that they did.
Cass, when you said that this was more Oprah Winfrey than Maury Povich, can you just explain what you mean by that? Is that Maury is a trashier talk show where they do paternity tests?
Yeah, you know, Maury's kind of in your face and kind of like Jerry Springer or something. You know? It's like, ooh, we got someone outing someone with their gender reveals and stuff, you know, and kind of almost salacious in their manner of trying to pull these things into a reality show out of context or even within the context. But sometimes at Tribal, I know Jeff will try to push issues and make them bigger, like, you know, in Cagayan forcing the Wu as the exchange student, you know, he said, oh, Cass, just, you know, go with this. And I said, I'm just not comfortable with saying Wu is my exchange student. And me and Tony, you know, and we got into an argument you didn't see because that wasn't something that I would say. So it really made me think when this was going on that Jeff is actually becoming a host again instead of being a producer who's got an end product in mind or a personal agenda or sees an opportunity.
Yeah.
So on these trashier talk shows, you know, they're trying to get stuff out of people and rile up everybody. Whereas this seemed more like Oprah, more like healing and open talk, you know? So I don't know how to explain it, but I saw a shift in Jeff that I, you know, I think was good.
Cass, do you think that that conversation, which was, you know, in, you know, 1 foot in the game and then 1 foot out of the game, do you feel like that that had any sort of impact on Jamal then and then his decision to play the idol? Did that throw him off in any way?
No, I think Jamal had that idea because he thought everybody was voting for Dean or Nora. So I think he thought he was protecting someone. I think their relationship is very complex, you know, how she says she hates him, but then she loves him. But then, you know, but then she's touching him, shaking his hand, holding his hand. If you watch their interpersonal relations, they're clearly friends and she doesn't hate him. I mean, you know, she's just saying that 'cause that's how her personality is. So I think he was planning to play it when Dean pulled that. I don't think Jamal was planning to play it, but I think he said he thought to himself, I got to save Nora. And then we'll just redo the votes and maybe I'll get Karishma out or, you know, someone else out and keep someone who is my ally here. So I think he was kind of backed in the corner, not by the conversation, just by the circumstances of Dean playing an idol.
There was that conversation between Nora and Jamal about and Dean about how Nora felt like, OK, well, you know, I'm indifferent to Dean. You know, I hate Jamal. But I'm indifferent to Dean, and you're somebody who has had a lot of strong relationships with the people that you've played with. Is it better to be hated by somebody than to have somebody be indifferent to you?
Well, I would rather be hated because that person's at least contemplating me as an entity, right? As a person. If you're indifferent, you know, say in Kanyan, say like Morgan, you're just a pillow, right? Somebody's really paying attention to you. And if you're not really actively playing the game, there's no need for anybody to do that. So Nora saying she's indifferent is more damaging than saying she hates. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
No, it's but, you know, and if you look at their relationship, just even over this, Jamal and Nora, like about the rice, you know, she said she hated Jamal's comment about her having more rice. And she had all these crazy comments about him, about being oppressive and you know, I think she's irritated by Jamal because he's a force and she's a force. And I think Tony and I in Cagayan went through the same thing. And I hated that guy sometimes, but I really liked him at other times.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't know, like nobody ever saw it, but Tony and I went on walks every morning. We were the first people up and we'd walk down the beach to check the crab traps and we'd talk about our families and stuff. You never saw that. So something like that could be going on with Jamal and Nora that we're not seeing. We're just seeing him say, why are you taking so much rice? Obviously he has a comfort level with her to say that because you and I both know you're not going to bring up that someone's eating more rice, you know, or maybe you are. But, so I think that's a more complex, there's a lot more going on there, but being indifferent to someone is definitely worse. Don't you think?
Yeah, I guess so. I feel like in general in life, I would prefer people are indifferent to me than people hate me, but I feel like that, at least in terms of like people that I have on the podcast, I would much rather you come on and say how you hate this season, as opposed to that you're indifferent to this season, because I feel like at least there's emotion there. At least you're charged up and we can, you know, find some things out, find out the reasons why you hate something, as opposed to why the reasons why you're indifferent to it. I wonder, Cass, just going back to Kagyan, was the difference between Wu and Tony in the final two, was that the case of somebody we hate versus somebody we're indifferent to?
Well, I think a lot of people didn't like Wu for things that happened out there too. Mm-hmm. You know, those things we never can speak of. Mm-hmm. But I think Wu didn't get to know people much like Dean is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Dean, I was thinking Dean's kind of like Heideck to me, like Brian Heideck.
Brian Heideck, how so?
Just kind of like the way he doesn't make eye contact with people. And
he's cold.
He's kind of cold, yeah.
But I think Brian Heideck had just a lot more agency in terms of what was going on, that Dean seems kind of oblivious to everything that's going on in the game.
Yeah, I don't know. Was Dean a recruit or did he apply?
I don't know. I don't know enough about it to speculate.
I just, some of his looks maybe just reminded me of that when I was watching.
Yeah, if I recall back, going just back to Josh's interviews with the cast, that I think that he was sort of a recent convert to the show, or he had watched it at one point and then was out of it, and then he had a story about how he ran into Mama C at Mardi Gras in New Orleans for a work meeting, or it might not have been Mardi Gras, but like in New Orleans. So like he knew enough about Survivor, but I think he had like a coworker who was like a really big Survivor fan.
Okay. But he wasn't a recruit from Love Island or something like that.
I don't believe so. No, this is okay. My brother. We don't share the same casting pool with Love Island on Survivor.
That's what you think.
Not
but yeah, love. And the other thing going into the merge with Dean being there and people being indifferent, do you give someone you're indifferent to your vote to win? Probably not.
I don't think so. I think you're right about that, in terms of that if there's somebody that you hate, I feel like that it's easier to turn around and give that person the vote as opposed to somebody that you're indifferent to.
Yeah. And in the jury at Ponderosa, people aren't going to talk about the people who are they're indifferent to. They're going to talk about the people they hate and the people they want to win.
Yeah.
Not about the people they really don't care about and they never got to know.
Yeah.
So that allowing that comment to come on air about the indifference really, to me, shows that Dean doesn't have a lot of connections. And even if he makes it to the end,
you're right. I think you're onto something with this, because I found with doing the podcast all of this time, it's easier to convert a hater into somebody who's a fan than it is to convert somebody who's indifferent into a fan. Like that hate, I think it is true about like the, you know, the old, pulling pigtails on the schoolyard. Oh, that means he likes you. Like, I do think that there is something there, like the person that is, you know, coming on that, I hate this. So you're the worst. Like, I do feel like that you're like one switch away from flipping that person into a super fan.
Yeah, I think it's easier. I mean, at least you have a conversation, a place to start a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whether it's based in dislike or like, it's not based in, oh, what about that guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And there are people when you're in Ponderosa where they're still in the game and you're talking about who's going to win out of six or seven people amongst yourselves. And some people's names don't even come up because they're a non-entity.
Mm-hmm. And so. You had the relationship with Andrew Savage where you guys did not see eye to eye, especially after that Wu vote. But then you guys became friends after the show. Is that same sort of thing where that you can go from having, you know, some animosity towards one another to a friendship?
I think that was a larder of Chardonnay.
Okay. The Chardonnay can help that.
Don't get me wrong. We don't send each other Christmas cards or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think that relationship was purely, you know, we're stuck there together. Obviously, Savage disliked me immensely.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, give him a couple glasses of wine, soften him up.
Yeah. But you've had other people that you played with, that you had animosity with in the game, that you've gone on to, you know, be friends with outside the show.
Yeah. I'm friends with Sarah Lucina.
Mm-hmm.
I'm friends with Trish.
Yeah.
You know? Jatia and I are friends. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe I am the great equalizer.
Yeah. So. Cass, coming out of this tribal council and going into the merge, does that help Kelly where, okay, this crazy thing just happened, but it's the merge and don't worry about what happened to Jack?
I think this is going to blow up right at the merge.
Mm-hmm.
So, because Nora already was asking, why didn't he play that idol before? Mm-hmm. You know, where did this come from? There's going to be questions in the light of day. You know, when you get back to camp, people, why'd that happen? Who, you know, people get very angry.
Yeah.
And you've got a few people who Jamal's going to want to know why Gilligan went home. You know, you got Skipper and then little buddy with Jack and Jamal.
Yeah.
What did little Jack do to anybody?
Yeah.
To have to go home. So I think questions are going to be asked. Who voted? Okay. Nora's going to spit out, I voted. Then they're going to say, why'd you vote? Because we were already being told she's very honest and you know what you're getting from her. So when she gets back that night and Jamal says, hey, I played my idol for you. Why did you vote? Did you vote for Jack? She'll say, yeah, I did. And he says, why? Who told her? Was it Kelly? The only person I can imagine telling her to have played the, you know, to have voted Jack is Kelly.
Right.
It's Kelly or Dean. And why the heck would Nora listen to someone she's indifferent to?
Mm-hmm. Because the thing about Dean was that they knew he had no idol from the previous tribal council. If he would have had an idol, then he would have played it on the tribal council that they went to earlier. Unless they're going to say, oh, Dean found it in the last couple of days here on the beach. And I don't know if they have any sort of evidence to prove, but he didn't go to the Island of the Idols. That he could say, oh, I found it, but I don't know if they're going to necessarily buy that. And then the question would be then, well, who could have given him an idol? And then when you look at the other suspects, it's like, well, did Janet get an idol from the Island of the Idols and give it to Dean? Probably not. And then you have to look at Kelly and then say, well, boy, I think she has been kind of friendly with him. Is it possible?
Well, plus it's going to come out that Nora voted for Jack.
Yeah. And
she won't be able to keep her mouth shut. And Someone's going to have to have told her that. She isn't randomly voting. She would randomly vote more likely for Karishma, probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why? And nobody in the group agreed to split the votes. Nobody agreed to do anything.
Or Jamal, she was also talking about that it was somebody that was, that she didn't have any love for either, that she wanted to potentially vote him out. That's what she told Dean. It just seemed very random that Nora would vote for Jack.
Right. So she's going to have some explaining to do.
Right. And she's also somebody that I think in the legal business, you would say is not going to hold up well under cross-examination.
No, she's going to crack. And so I think we're going to see all this right before the merge. We're going to see the when they return to camp segment, mm-hmm. and there's going to be an explosion. Who voted for Jack? Mm-hmm. Why? You know, what about this idol? I think we're going to see a big fireworks show. And then they're going to be like, hey, it's merge time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to get the reset and fireworks are going to explode because you're going to have half of these people who thought they were in control and knew what was going on and their minds were just blown and they go reunite and then more paranoia is going to set. So Kelly may have set in motion what may be a really great merge episode, even though maybe something not so fantastic is going to be the result, but we're going to have a lot of drama and conflict.
Cass, do you think that for Kelly, she got a little too cute with this, where she could have just given Dean the idol and said, okay, you vote for, you know, whoever, pick out Jack, Jamal, vote out one of those guys. That's the deal. And then she was like, oh, but what if Dean ends up voting me out with my idol? So now I need the contingency of let me tell Nora and make sure that Nora is voting, because I'll tell Nora that just in case Dean has an idol, then you got to put a vote on somebody else, because then that'll protect you from going home, but she's actually protecting herself from potentially Dean putting the rogue vote on her, but now she's got another patsy involved with this plan. Should she have just gone with, hey, I'm going to go with Dean, you vote out Jack, that's it?
Yeah, I think that would have given her a little more room to kind of wiggle out of it, you know, down the road when she's getting cross-examined. And also, if she was feeling insecure that Dean might throw a vote her way because she gives him the idol, that's not the person you give your idol to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, how strong is that bond if you're having to make a contingency plan for your little game to give Dean an idol?
That's a good point.
Like, how, if you're not confident.
Right.
Why would you do that?
If you can't even trust he's not going to vote you out at that tribal council, how do you trust him to keep this secret moving forward?
Yeah, and you've just let another person in on the secret, basically, by telling Nora this stuff. So, overall, I think the net gain is not going to be there for her.
Yeah, it's just like one of these things where, like, on Breaking Bad, you know, every time that, Walter White and Jesse would, break one law, it's like, okay, now things are worse. Now we have to do more to cover up, and they end up, doing more bad stuff to cover up the previous bad stuff that they did. And so I feel like that this is going to get out of control for Kelly.
Yeah, there's just too many loose ends.
Okay. You were in two different merges in Cagayan, where people were very much on their two sides that were even, with basically Sarah in the middle of, okay, well, which way is she going to ultimately go? And then in Second Chances, things were more lopsided. There was a big alliance, and they were coming for you and ultimately your friends who were going to be the target for the next couple of votes. Which do you see? Do you think that we're going to end up with one big alliance, or do you think that people will sort of go to their respective sides?
I think people will end up at their respective sides for the merge. I think it's going to be so chaotic and no one's going to trust anything. They're going to go with a safe vote.
Right.
So it's maybe Karishma,
Well, I feel like that Karishma is actually somebody who's in a kind of a good spot, because if it turns into the original Vokai versus the original Lyro, where, you have the four people that got Jason voted out last week, I'm not sure necessarily if Dean is going back with them. And I don't know if Karishma is necessarily going. I mean, Missy referred to Karishma as a vote in her pocket at one point, but it seems like that Karishma has thrown her lot in with this group. I think that she'll be, a person to watch in terms of which side is she going to flip to. Okay. Well, we saw her with Lauren, and I thought that was very interesting, the moment after the reward challenge. She had talked with Lauren. She wants to keep Lauren safe, didn't want her to go anywhere, and she wanted to get rid of Tommy to keep Lauren. And then once they won that challenge, she put her arm around Lauren and said, "Let's go win the game now." I thought that was a very interesting. I mean, it wasn't quite a top five baby where Tony was overheard right before the merge in Cagayan. But I thought that was an interesting thing to say cross tribal.
It is an interesting thing. But at the beginning, she also was talking to Lauren, and Lauren wasn't convinced, right, that Missy was, all in with her. And the way Missy presented it to Lauren was this girl connection they have and these other girls is important for Missy's game. Nothing about our game. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of the episode, we're not hearing about me and Lauren are going to work on this together. We're hearing Missy say, "I need to get Lauren in here. She's got the connections to the women on the other side." So I also found that interesting when she hugged her and said, "Now let's go win this game," or whatever. I don't know if she was more saying that to herself or to Lauren.
Do you think, is it possible that Lauren said to Missy, "Hey, you guys are just going to throw the challenge. I know it. You guys are going to throw the challenge, so you can vote one of us out." And is it possible that Missy said to her, "Look, we're not doing that. I'm a winner. I'm not going to throw a challenge. I'll prove it to you. We're going to go out there. We're going to win immunity, and you'll see." And then is that possible that then they won the challenge? She said, "Okay, see, I ended up, keeping my word. Let's go win the game now."
Well, I do think people who are more with a sports background and athletes don't want to throw challenges. Just psychologically, they have a hard time. Plus, when you're on a winning streak, you don't want to lose that streak, especially for someone who, is athletic and is used to winning. So I think that was an influence on that. Mm-hmm. But I'm watching this Missy and her relationships very closely, because I really like her, but I feel like Lauren is going to be the downfall of both Tommy and Missy.
Interesting. Why Lauren? Why do you think she's going to be the downfall of Missy?
I just think Missy's putting a lot of stock in her, right? And in her in Lauren's connections on the other side when they get to emerge. And Lauren hasn't expressed a vested interest really in keeping Missy at all. We haven't seen Lauren say, "Now let's go win this," or "This is you're good for my game." We've seen Missy say all that to Lauren, but we haven't seen Lauren say that back.
Yeah, we don't know where Lauren's head is necessarily, other than she is a big fan of Tommy. And we know that Missy has talked about at different points in the season about wanting to, you know, keep the women together. But I don't know necessarily if that's Lauren's plan.
Right. I don't know that that's anybody's plan after the tribal last night, where all the women are saying, hey, look, just because we're women doesn't mean, you know, we're going to work together.
Well, that's where this is getting so complicated, Cass. And like, I really could use your expertise in I'm personally unsure how to cover this, where we have on the one hand a group of women who are saying, hey, don't say Women's Alliance. That this is sexist to talk about the, you know, just because we're women doesn't mean that we're going to make a Women's Alliance. But then on the other hand, we do have women that are different women that are talking about, hey, we've got this Women's Alliance.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really, like I said, it's more a reflection of production trying to shift to bring these gender issues to light. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're hitting the tip of the iceberg here, where they're almost kind of, okay, let's let everybody know we're aware of this and we're going to address this. This stuff. I don't think it's going to reflect in the gameplay. You know, I think the people mm-hmm. in the game are going to do what they're going to do. And I don't see a Women's Alliance coming out of this, because I think there's too many bonds with men, between the men and women, you know, just like we're not seeing a Men's Alliance happening.
Yeah.
These things happen. They happen every time, right? The guys got to stick together. The girls got to stick together. It's nothing new. I don't know any women who haven't contemplated a Women's Alliance. Mm-hmm. I can't speak for men, you know, it comes up every season.
Yeah.
So I know the fan base really wants one, and they like the Black Widow Brigade, Coven, and all these things, you know, mm-hmm. it's more of a novelty, you know, where it shouldn't really be.
Yeah. So, now, Cass, I know you were there just for like the early days of, you know, the Witches Coven coming together with yourself and with Kelly and Sierra and Abby. Was there any talk about how this is going to be perceived at home in terms of like, oh, the fans are going to really love this idea of us women working together?
No, I think it was more that we didn't have the numbers and we had to work together.
Mm-hmm.
The only time I've contemplated what the fans would think about working with someone is when I had to go to Spencer and, you know, at that time and get Woo out.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, you know, I said to Spencer, the fans are going to freaking flip if we're working together,
mm-hmm.
you know, and nobody would expect it. But in terms of working with women, I don't think it, caring what the fans want really mattered at that point in the game.
Yeah. Cass, going back to this new version of the Lyra tribe, I couldn't believe that they didn't throw the challenge last night. It just seems like that you had this one area where they felt like that they had Tommy dead to rights, where they could have taken him out. And Missy is like, I'm going to be able to free up Lauren and now we'll get him out of there. And I was just stunned that they didn't do this.
Yeah. And it was a close challenge. It would have been pretty easy to just make a mistake.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know,
you said you never threw a challenge. Would you be opposed to it?
I personally wouldn't be opposed to it if it were for strategic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the game has gotten to where strategy trumps winning a challenge.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be opposed to throwing a challenge if it's going to further my game or get my alliance the firm numbers, especially if we're heading towards a merge.
Mm-hmm. Cass, on one of the podcasts last week, somebody had written in a question that said about how, you know, there's so many crazy advantages on Survivor. Anything could happen. Do you think that that's a reason why players may not want to throw these challenges, because you don't know what advantage or idol is going to pop up?
Yeah, that's one. And, you know, why lose a challenge? It also just ruins your momentum psychologically. It's not fun. You know, when someone says, I got nothing for you, it still mm-hmm. impacts you in some way.
Yeah.
So, you know, and people aren't out there to lose. When you go, people who play Survivor are playing Survivor because they like to win and they can see themselves winning.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to convince quite a few people to throw a challenge too. And inevitably, probably two people on that tribe were like, no way, I'm throwing a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just such opportunity.
I know, but as strategists, you think that, but as players, and sometimes you think, oh, what are people going to think at home? They're not going to know why I did this. You know, I want to win. My kids are watching. Whatever you're thinking, Yeah, I think it's hard to get a whole tribe to throw a challenge.
So we saw where Lauren and Tommy were saying, hey, we got to scramble here. We got to make sure it's not one of us. Let's try to get Dan voted out. It seems like that Dan is having no problem trying to get himself voted out on his own. But for whatever reason, that his name wasn't out there on the consideration for the person they should go after. What did you think of the way that Tommy and Lauren were trying to get Dan voted out?
Well, I mean, they saw a crack, right? They know people are uncomfortable with some things that are going on at camp. And so they're trying to drive a wedge in that crack, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what everybody does. But it is pretty obvious. Missy caught on to it right away.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, why are they doing this? You know, it was interesting, too. We saw Tommy kind of crying at the well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he was acting or if that was genuine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Tommy is more safe than we think because of his bond with Aaron.
Yeah.
I think he's safer than Lauren.
Aaron, he's got Elizabeth and Elaine, right? Mm-hmm. And he's got Tommy. So Tommy has connections once they merge. Elizabeth and Elaine are in a good spot and he doesn't have any enemies. Mm-hmm. And we saw the socks, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Missy and Aaron have a connection as well.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really wild with this merch because there's so many like spare parts where I feel like that we have like the bulk of the original Lyro and then there's a lot of fluidity to this.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting what happens. Plus, like we were talking about throwing a challenge, if you couldn't get the majority to agree to throw a challenge to, you know, kind of trim some of that fat from the other side. How are, when they come together, are they going to be able to make a decision with more people in the works?
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes having too many people is more of a problem than having too few.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that we will see more threats go out early, or do you think that we'll see more people who are sort of just like the agreeable sort of, okay, well, this person is sort of the dead weight type votes?
I think our first vote will be a dead weight vote.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there'll be some consensus, maybe because we saw in the preview all this conflict, maybe that'll all be traced back to someone. It'll be that person. But I really don't think it's going to be a strategic vote, you know, or a big move or anything. I think it's going to be someone who's either annoying people, who's revealed to have been duplicitous like Kelly, or someone nobody really contemplates at the top of an alliance or getting to the end with. But we also have a trend in this season where people are protecting people very early on,
mm-hmm.
who I feel like they think will be goats. So that's another dynamic, like Jamal playing his idol for Nora.
Oh.
Is he already thinking this is going to be one of my final three? It's going to be me and her, and we'll cross that bridge later.
That's so interesting.
And also we've got Missy with Lauren. We've seen Lauren crying and emotional. Is Missy saying, okay, this is going to be one of my people I'm going to take to the end?
Yeah.
And then Karishma, everybody's like, I want to take Karishma to the end.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it seems like we almost have this trend of people having already picked someone they want to sit next to. And that's really, really getting ahead of the game. But why are we seeing these bonds and this kind of pandering to people who may not be able to garner jury votes so early on?
Yeah, this is wild, Cass, that I hadn't thought of it that way, where you mentioned Jamal and Nora. But we've talked about all season about people that, oh, like, I can't vote out Karishma. I got to we'll keep her around. And I've said, like, watch, you know, these people are going to go all to the end. If everybody is trying to bring goats to the end, that do you feel like that this could backfire, Cass?
We could have a goat party. It'd be great.
Yeah. Well, I've said for a while, I think that really what people need to do is start voting these goats out because they clog up all the spaces at the end of the game. Cass, do you think that we are in for a season where we end up with a lot of goats at the end?
No, I think we're going to have I don't know. Well, yeah. What if you've got these people who are kind of hitching up their goats right now and dragging them to the end and then the goats end up in it? That would be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that's the dangerous game people are playing with. Hey, let's keep people around who, you know, oh, you know, nobody likes Dan, but that's why we should keep him. You know, it's at some point you got to start getting rid of these people. They're going to take up all the spots at the end.
What if it's a Dan Karishma Nora final three?
Oh, boy. we don't need to figure out who's going to win necessarily at that point. Jack became the mayor of Ponderosa last night, Cass, a title that you once held way back when in Second Chances. Do you think that Jack is cut out for this position?
I don't think Jack is going to be a manipulative mayor of Ponderosa.
Mm-hmm.
As some have been in the past. Mm-hmm. I won't mention names.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the next person who comes in, if we get, say, Janet coming in or something, that will be the person who guides Ponderosa.
Mm-hmm.
But say we get Dean coming in, I think we're going to have an indifferent and chaotic jury. You know, I think Jack is going to embrace being part of Ponderosa, and he's excited to be there and have played. But I don't think he's in the game to... Like, I know when I went to Ponderosa as the queen, as I like to say, I considered it a second phase of the game that I hadn't considered before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, I'm still in the game. I'm actually guaranteed to get to the final three and have a say.
Yeah.
So that's how I embraced the role in Ponderosa, whereas I don't know that Jack's there, you know, in that role. So you have different. And I always say the first person that you send to that jury house is the most important. One of your most important vote outs.
Yeah, they set the tone. And now in this case, they had no idea they were sending somebody to Ponderosa.
Yeah, and only two people voted for him.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't have any hard feelings.
Yeah.
All of his allies were as blindsided as he was. So he doesn't have any anger. He doesn't have any agenda there,
mm-hmm.
which is great, which is a great place to be. But in terms of proclaiming oneself the mayor of Ponderosa and running the show there, that's an interesting position. I don't think he will embrace the role.
Yeah. Cass, it's so interesting that so you've been the first person on a jury and the last person on a jury. And so how different is your perspective after being the first person and watching the whole jury unfold and then being the last person who gets added to the jury on day 38?
Well, I think being the last person in my first season, I underestimated the power of the jury house. And just how sitting there for 19 days commiserating with other losers,
mm-hmm.
And being able to determine who the winner is going to be of something that you wanted very desperately in your life.
Right.
I think my first season, I learned that the hard way, even though I didn't make it to the end. I didn't realize how bitter people could be and how angry people could be about being voted out. So even before Second Chances, in my pregame stuff, I said my biggest concern in the game is not pissing off the first person who goes into the jury house, because having a mortal enemy be that person and that person being the person you blindsided.
Mm-hmm.
Really, even if you get to the end, is going to screw
you in Kagyan where you blindsided Sarah.
Yes. So, you know, that sets the tone. If that person goes in and goes, yeah, it's just a game and they got me before I got them. Then you're not in any trouble. But if it's someone who is really invested and angry, you know, you're in trouble if you get to the end. Because that person, every person who comes in, the first person they see, the person they talk to the most, sets that tone and kind of runs that house and can sway people.
Yeah, because you feel like that, I guess, that being added to the jury, you know, so early. I mean, and this is what, day 16 or 17 for Jack. So, a very early addition to the merge. It's like, well, you know, I want my experience to, you know, really be meaningful. And I only got to play for 16, 17 days that, you know, I'm going to play hard on the jury.
Yeah. And I remember Sarah Lucina saying to me after Kagyan that she was so pissed she spent more time at Ponderosa than in the game.
Yeah.
And that didn't sit well with her. I don't think Jack has that disposition, though. He seems like a nice guy. He's probably just going to, you know, embrace the moment and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
As much fun as you can have at Ponderosa.
Yeah. He seems like a fun-loving guy.
Yeah. So I think if we get a stronger personality in there next, say a Jamal or a Janet or someone who commands a little authority,
mm-hmm.
or likes to be heard in that manner, we're going to see that person control the jury house.
Yeah. And just to go back to the day 38 being voted out, and you know, for me, and that, because that's when I went out in my first season, I would have, you know, had a lot, a very long stay on the jury if I was on the jury my second season. But yeah, I don't think I had any sort of like strategic conversations with anybody the day after, you know, on the day of the final tribal council. I think that maybe I talked to like one person for like 10 or 15 minutes. And there really wasn't a lot of sort of like groupthink in terms of what we were doing. But I would have to imagine that the people that were there for longer definitely might have gotten into that a bit more.
Oh, yeah. When you sit there, that's what you talk about. And then you go to tribal council and then you come back. And after tribal, you know, when you sit through it, you come back and you have drinks and then you have nothing to do the next 2 days. So you sit around and talk about what happened. You find out what happened from the latest person. But yeah, the day 38 club, I mean, you get out, you go through medical, you get your cheeseburger, you take your shower, you're exhausted. You get up the next day, do a little bit of interviews, and then it's time to go to tribal. So you really don't have a lot of that time. And that day 39, if you're on the jury, you know, Jeff's coming over. Everybody's talking to you about what's going to happen at final tribal. Mm-hmm. What are you planning to ask? How are you planning to ask it? That kind of thing is going on. So you don't have a lot of time. Obviously, in Kabagyan, nobody spoke to me anyway when I came in, right? So so I didn't have anybody caring who I was going to vote for or why. In fact, not one person asked me or even tried to influence me on that. Mm-hmm. But those decisions are all made before day 38 anyway. At that point, if you're early in the jury, you're just waiting for those last people to get voted out and you just want it over with.
Yeah, you're just looking forward to the end.
Yeah, when you get down to the final six, you're like, okay, I'm happy with either of these two people winning. Mm-hmm. And I might have to rethink my decision if it's one of these people. But if you've been in the jury house that long, you're just like, I don't care. I just want to go home, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's a ponderosa fatigue that sets in. And I think with these bigger juries, you're going to see more of that fatigue where they're, you know, people are just like, I just don't care. I'm out of the game. I've been out of the game. You know, I'm tired of sitting on this beach. I'd like to call my home, you know, things like that. So these bigger juries, I think you're going to have a tougher time handling bitter juries and things like that too.
Right.
Not with Jack per se, but
yeah,
in general.
So I know you certainly would have liked to have been on the jury rather than to have not been on the jury in Second Chances. Do you think that the jury sizes have gotten too big?
I do think so. I do think the jury size is too big.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why it keeps getting bigger. And especially with the new format where we're not even hearing from everybody anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's just like you're trapped at Ponderosa. And if you know you're not one of the characters of the season or you're not going to get a lot of screen time, you just like, I don't even care. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. I think that part of the reason is I think they like having like the studio audience at Tribal Council when like crazy stuff happens.
Yeah, but at Final Tribal, not much crazy stuff happens.
No. But I think along the way, I think they like getting like, you know, having the audience there at the Tribal Council.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
but I think now with the format where Jeff's letting people go off and have, you know, their private sidebars and stuff where the audience isn't seeing it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of diminishing the whole tribal council anyway.
In what way?
Well, like we've seen recently where, you know, I know when I played, he was like, don't even look at each other. Don't talk unless spoken to. Now we've got little groups making decisions at tribal and able to speak to each other. Not within our earshot necessarily, right?
Yes. So what do you think with that? Is that more Maury Povich or Oprah?
That's more Maury Povich.
Maury
definitely.
Povich is whispering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Allowing a little bit of, I don't know, maybe he's just trying new things, but I don't like that when I can't at the tribal, I don't like this diversion where people can get up and go talk to each other. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't happen in an actual jury scenario.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not the necessarily like the jurors aren't getting up and whispering. But are you saying that like in a courtroom that they wouldn't allow like the lawyer to go whisper into the ear of the defendant?
Yeah.
Or the person on the witness stand?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. Whatever.
Yeah. All right.
Yes. We're going off on a sidebar there.
Oh, this is great stuff, Cass. Wait, you're bringing it.
How old is Janet? I
I don't know. I don't know off the top of my head. I think she's in her 50s.
Because Jeff just turned 58, right?
Yes. I'm saying yes, but I don't know. He looks great.
She's 59.
Okay. So they're contemporaries.
They are. Like, they could have gone to the prom together.
Yeah.
I mean, really, they're in the same age group.
Right. So they're similar sensibilities.
But maybe that's why he's taken a step back in that tribal to, respect his peers. Because he's not often in the company of his peers on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's an astute observation.
Or have people been saying to Jeff, okay, boomer?
No. I don't know if anybody said, okay, boomer to him. But I do think that if I had to say that, I think the transformative figure in all this, I feel like was Angelina. I think that Angelina came along. I don't think the show necessarily knew how to what to do with her. But she was, such a polarizing character. And then, and then the response to her was so huge. Huge that I think that and she called out a lot of stuff, and I think that they felt like, oh, well, we should, figure out a way to bake some of this into the show.
Yeah, I think a lot has changed in the last, I'd say, 5 to 10 years. Just, people have been more vocal about the gender issues on the show. I've always said, hey, put half of production needs to be female. Why don't we have female EPs out there? I think I've always said it would be a better social experiment to put an entire crew in production that's female, put the same ratio female to male, and play the game and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because if those men have to go poop in the bushes in front of a female crew, knowing, there's a lot that goes on out there, and you're being filmed, or you're surrounded by a crew and you don't have a lot of privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always said, for younger women, knowing there's no escape, or anywhere you can go to get privacy, and not having anyone you can trust or relate to who's not in the game and opposed to you, it's a different vibe than going on a walk with three guys to go have a confessional.
Yeah.
A woman's not going to have these candid conversations or joke around as easily as a guy is, just like a guy wouldn't probably with an all-female crew.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always said that's why idols are often found on these walks. That's why there's a camera crew with people.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing. I mean, obviously this season, having the Island of the Idols, where we've had mostly women go there, they're getting the advantages.
Yeah. Do you think that that's been a good equalizer in terms of distributing these advantages, and is having them given out on the Island of the Idols?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of an equalizer. I mean, I think the bigger equalizer would just be to have a more diverse crew.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff. And also, when we see them in challenges or not traditionally around camp, I guess maybe would be the key. Let's not put idols at camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because women have fewer opportunities to go off on their own. And you're not really on your own. You're with a camera crew when you find one, right?
Typically.
Yeah. So it's
as far as I've seen on the TV show.
So the only time you're alone with a camera crew when you can leave the camp is when you're going to go on a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to go do a confessional away from the camp.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Men do more confessionals. There's just statistically more chances for a man around camp to find one.
Let me bring in some questions from the audience. While we're on this subject, Sam on Twitter wanted to ask you, Cass said in Kagyan that had she been a man, her gameplay would have been more respected. Now that gender issues are being brought up on the show, does she think that if she played the same game today, she would have been more respected than she was?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Is that by the other players or by the audience?
I think that's in general. I mean, Kagyan was a weird cast too, because it's weird that so many people after the game, and Lacina and I have talked about this numerous times, how she was just mad at me because I beat her and that I was on the bottom and they were going to get rid of me and it was the right move for me. But nobody wanted to admit that at that time, and that was part of why I was considered delusional, hysterical, estrogen fueled. All of the comments that came out in Kagyan, imagine those coming out now. If Spencer said she's just fueled by her estrogen, the things that were said would be totally unacceptable to be said and shown today.
Mm-hmm. Was that if we had show?
Or
that
yeah, we're, yeah, yeah. So imagine the blowback Spencer would have gotten now mm-hmm. for saying I was estrogen fueled and making emotional decisions when I did something that was just against his game.
Mm-hmm.
But to further my game, I think we look at moves differently. And I don't think the show would show that comment
mm-hmm.
these days. Can you imagine if they showed that on this, you know, like on last night's episode, if he showed someone who was upset saying she was just estrogen fueled?
Yeah. I don't know necessarily if they wouldn't show it, but it definitely would have a much different reaction.
Yeah. Yet but in Kagyan, I'm still the bad guy. I never said, things like that about men. Well, mm-hmm. I did say that college age men were selfish, mm-hmm. which I stand by that comment.
Okay. Okay. Killian has a question for you that Cass had the chance to play with some very bombastic players who made wild moves on her season. I'm sure she knows the value and threats that come with blindsides. Is it worth making the big crazy moves in the pre-merge?
Well, I mean, it depends why you're making the move. Right. Is it mm-hmm. really? Yeah. Pre-merge, especially going right into the merge, you don't want to make some wild and crazy move. But pre-merge, the only reason to make a crazy move is to save your own game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And try to get to that merge where you can hit that reset button or to a swap. But in terms of value at the end of the game, as we saw in Cambodia when at Final Tribal, you know, Tasha played a great pre-merge.
Mm-hmm.
Over on Angkor, you know, she was running that and she was playing well and saving herself and,
right.
and doing, making all the right moves. I never have discounted her pre-merge game.
Mm-hmm.
And that was some great gameplay. But when she tried to bring that up at Final Tribal, right. nobody cares.
That's
nobody cares
point.
About your time on Angkor or how tough it was that you didn't have rice or that Jatia threw your rice in the fire. You know, nobody cares about that because, first of all, most of those people aren't on the jury.
Mm-hmm.
And second, in Survivor, every day is like a year. So you're talking about something to these people that happened 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be huge on your resume, but it's like me talking about something an award I got in the Navy in 1992 to someone today and a job interview.
Yeah.
They're gonna be like, why are you bringing this up?
Right.
It's nothing I personally saw and it never personally affected me, has no bearing on why we're here today. So don't bring it up. So I think pre-merge moves, while fun and a way to get your feet wet and hopefully survive and maybe learn some lessons, the pre-merge is just kind of like junior high, mm-hmm. you know, fumble your way through, get there and get into high school and then get on the varsity team.
Right.
You know,
Think in a weird way, Cass, did Kelly benefit from Jack being on the jury in that if she one day gets to the final three and could talk about her moves that could she say like, hey, I made the move. I gave Dean the idol and then I ended up getting Jack voted out because he was a big threat as opposed to if he was just like some forgotten pre-juror by that point. Is it almost like give more significance to the move she made?
I don't think he'll take it that way because I don't think he sees why somebody would do that to him at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were Jack, I'd be like, yeah, I get that. But why did you do it then? You didn't know I was going to be on the jury and we didn't have a beef. You know, why right. target me so far out?
Yeah.
It strategically. And by then everyone will have dissected that move. If she gets to the end, depending how she gets there, I don't think this move is what's going to get her to the end. I think it's going to be what prevents her from getting to the end.
Yeah. And I had said that last night on the Know-It-Alls that if she made this move and it was the final seven instead of just a, you know, a pre-merge tribal council with seven people, I would feel a lot differently about it. I feel like that, you know, now you're really playing hard and, you know, going to the final three with a lot of momentum. But I feel like that this was early for this. Now, you played, of course, with Tony in your first season and, you know, he was making a lot of these crazy moves. And when you make a move like this early on, are you now forced to now do you have to keep the crazy moves coming in order to keep moving forward like Tony had to do?
Well, I mean, Tony is Tony, right? Tony right. is a little bit erratic in many ways and paranoia driven. So his moves weren't necessarily driven by strategy all the time. A lot of times they were paranoia
mm-hmm.
was driving them. And then you got to remember, he didn't play he had Trish the whole way covering him, covering things up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Dean's going to cover for Kelly. Right. And I don't think anybody's going to listen to Dean if he tries to cover for Kelly.
Yeah.
So you have to look at the, it's a totally different game. She may calm down after this. I just think it's going to end. It's not going to end well for her.
Mm. Yeah.
Because the trust is going to be gone. And if she can do so, like what I did in Kagyan at the merge, I had the big flip and then I had to convince Tony and his gang that I'm not a flip flopper to keep me, right? The easy vote, the easy next vote would have been to get me out.
Yeah.
As this big flipper. So I had to do a lot of damage control there. And then I had to just kind of hide for a few episodes or a few days and let the chips fall where they may. And Tony did some stuff then that I didn't approve of, but I couldn't go against him because I was still trying to get into that group or get into a group that was not going to try to get me out after betraying half the people there.
Yeah.
So she needs to, her best play right now would be to lay low.
Okay.
You know, as low as possible. But Dean can just blow that up.
Tommy Guam has a question. Does Kelly target Dean and or Nora now to keep her scheming secret? I think Dean is loyal, but not sure about Nora. I think Nora was confused. Will Nora be loyal to Jamal now? There's so many possibilities that could happen going to the merch. That was a lot of questions. I want to focus in on, will Nora be loyal to Jamal now? I think that this is always an interesting question. I think survivors often think about things like, oh, I'm going to do this move to this person and then they'll be loyal to me. Then they'll have my back. And I find often, Cass, that people are very, very excited that you did the favor for them, but then very quickly forget about that. What you did to save me.
Yeah. I mean, Survivor is a self-serving game. It's not, don't do me a favor because, and I'm not going to do one for you, especially post-merge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the name of the game is to get to the end at this point. And but I do think her body language towards Jamal doesn't show that she hates him. Like when she grabbed his hand, she covered, you know, she used both hands to clasp his hand and say thank you. And then she touched him on the thigh and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was very intimate and telling, like, thank you so much, like genuine.
Yeah.
And so she's going to have some stuff to process. I think she's going to feel betrayed by Kelly. And Dean.
Yeah.
Because of the idol. If they would have told her that they had the idol and what they were planning, she wouldn't feel betrayed. But because she was used, nobody likes to get used.
That's interesting because that under these circumstances, I feel like that Nora, who I think is, you know, it's fair to say, impulsive. Now she's feeling very good about Jamal, who just played the idol on her. And now when Jamal asks her the question about, hey, why did you end up voting for Jack? What was that about? Like, I feel like that she's going to be very honest with Jamal about, Kelly told me to do that.
Yeah, that's completely what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So Nora's going to be safe and not feeling happy with Kelly and Dean. And then you've got two easy targets right there.
Mm-hmm. And then Kelly is going to say, well, I was just thought that Dean, I know how he feels about Nora. I thought he might play an idol on Nora. I didn't want to see Nora go home. I'm like, well, why did you say to get rid of Jack? Like, why didn't you tell her to vote for Karishma?
Yeah. So. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope that, you know, people aren't thinking I'm a hater of all these moves. I don't want to be a wet blanket like Stephen Fishback. But I just think that there's a lot of problems here, Cass.
Oh, yeah, that move. I found a lot of problems with that move.
OK. All right.
I can see why Jamal played for Nora, though. He's trying to gain something. But what does Kelly really gain from Dean?
Yeah.
And what does he bring to the table? Kelly already had more on the table.
For Jamal, though, why wouldn't it be better to keep his idol and to lose Nora? I mean, this is an age-old question that we've talked about on the podcast. Is it better to have an idol or an ally?
I think an ally.
Mm-hmm.
A good ally. I think you have to play this game with another at least one person that you...
Is she a good ally? She was talking about she hates him. She wants to vote him out in the last episode.
But she hates him because he says stuff and he's annoying at camp. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of bossy, you know. Yeah. And I mean... That's like me when, you know, the computer's not working. Oh, I hate this computer.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't mean I hate the computer tomorrow. It means I hate it right now because it's really bothering me.
It's like when my wife talks about how she hates me.
I don't know about that. That's that's another episode.
That's different.
That's a whole nother episode. But I don't think she really hates him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's more like a brother-sister, like, oh, my God, shut up already about my rice. mm-hmm. you know, let the girl start the fire. You know, I mean, I think it's that point of annoyance where you can argue and dislike someone because you're comfortable with them more than I hate this person mm-hmm. and I don't trust them.
Cass, let me give you this question that's from Amy Cook, who wants to ask you. I'm really interested to hear Cass's thoughts on Karishma as a female attorney who bounced around a bit before figuring out what she was doing. Does Cass see a way for Karishma to turn her game around and get to the end?
No.
No, you can't.
I mean, I can see her getting to the end, but not to win.
Mm.
Because we keep getting these negative things of Karishma, like at the beginning when it was raining and stuff.
Yeah.
Why did we see everybody getting rained on and then her just saying, I'm wet?
Well, you know what? I think it was because that they had the shot of her where they were going from like her at nighttime to her like in the same spot in the morning. I think that might have been why we saw that.
Well, then we saw that Kelly was like under a basket, kind of dry, sleeping happily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was an interesting juxtaposition there, but there was no need to show us that. They could have just shown us the rain and the shelter and everyone wet. They didn't have to waste 2 seconds showing Karishma saying, I'm wet.
Mm-hmm.
And then they showed us her confessional, voting confessional. I think it was the only one we saw where she was kind of like, hey, Dean, neener, neener, I'm done with you. And I'm going to get, I don't know what she said.
She said, you took 3 shots to vote at me and I am getting you out on my first shot.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost cringeworthy, right? Know he's not going now.
Right, right.
But why are we only being shown those things
mm-hmm.
as a viewer? Yeah. We've seen a lot of negative about Karishma
yeah.
and not much positive. So I don't know, just from the edit side, if we can see her dig her way out.
Yeah. Should Lyra be trying to throw Karishma under the bus for her original tribe? Should they be saying like, hey, let's vote out Karishma this time?
You know, I'm never a fan of throwing out names of anybody.
Hmm.
Because that always comes back to you. But,
right.
You know, and now we're at an individual stage. Karishma's probably safe for a while because she's going to. And, you know, I always have that theory of there's players that have a 39-day game in them and there's players that can only last 18 to 21 days. And Karishma is an 18 to 21 day player. She's not going to be happy out there. She's going to shut down physically and mentally, I think, from the elements and from all of that. And when you get to the merge, there's far more pressure to play.
Yeah.
You know, there's more paranoia. There's a lot more going on. So I think she'll be someone who shuts down just because the game is hard.
Do you think that she could potentially end up in the position that you were in Kaguyan, where the Vokai people say to her, like, okay, Karishma, tell us a name. Who do you want? Who do you want us to get rid of? That's who we'll vote out at this first vote after the merge.
Well, that could happen, actually.
Because if she is loyal to wherever the numbers are, I do think that she is the person this season that embodies the most of anybody but me. Give me 3 more days. Like, I do think that she would go with, you know, whoever was offering her a majority.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Let me ask you about the Island of the Idols a little bit. Game Boy Guru wants to ask you, wouldn't it be a much better advantage to send anyone from Tribal Home instead of just yourself? Or was it still not worth it? Was that a great advantage that they were offering to Janet? Or did Janet suss out that this was a bad offer?
I think Janet played the right move for her.
Mm-hmm.
So Janet's a loyal person. So she's going to think about the tribe. She's going to think out everything. So I do think it was a good decision for her and how she's playing the game. For me, I would have wanted the advantage, but I come from a different place, you know, of how I want to get. But I think it was absolutely the right decision for her.
Yeah. It's a weird advantage because that a lot of times you're going into these tribal councils where, okay, we're going to, you know, our group is putting together this vote. And it's almost like that, not that I'm ever in any fights with people, but, you know, if you have a bunch of friends and you're supposed to, you know, get into a fight. And then again, not that I know anything about this, Cass, but it's like, oh, but I have this excuse. This note that says, okay, I'm excused from the fight. I get to go home. I don't have to be there. Like, I do think that your allies would be pretty annoyed with you.
They would. So, yeah, I mean, but I'm saying you're asking a person who always has to play from the bottom and scramble. And I would rather have that advantage personally. But she's someone who's trusted, respected and everything. So she has more to lose. For her style of play and how she's playing, she made the right decision.
How do you feel about the Island of the Idols? We've barely touched on them.
I'm not smitten by the idea. I mean, it's a gimmick. I think it's been fun and funny at points. You know,
yeah.
I love Sandra. I've always loved Sandra, and I like her little snarky comments, but I'm over it. Mm-hmm. You know, Boston Rob, I've never been the biggest fan of, mm-hmm. and I just feel it's kind of overplayed. It's almost like comedic relief. I'm in this little private Survivor club that I've been in forever where we have a pool.
Yeah.
And it's interesting though, because a lot of my friends who I've known way before I even played Survivor or even applied, they all love it. And most middle-aged women or women of my demographic seem to have an infatuation with Boston Rob.
Swoon for Boston Rob.
I cannot explain it. I'm always putting that little barf emoji when they make those comments.
Come on, Cass.
But, you know, I don't know. It's played out. And hey, is there going to be...
Smarten up.
Oh, my God. Don't ruin my personal life right now.
Don't do the barf emoji.
But, you know, we had the mention this episode of, I don't know, the Secret Alliance or something of people who've been to the Island of the Idols. Is that going to emerge at the merge? Are all the people who went to the Island of Idols going to kind of come out and be like, hey, what'd you think? You know, because there is a bond that's developing with a secret. And when we have a secret, it forms a bond, right? But it's also leverage. So who's going to misuse that leverage of that crew? Probably Kelly, you know?
Right.
So she's a liability also to the people who went to Island of the Idols.
Mm-hmm.
And when is this going to come to fruition where everybody's like, oh my God, there's two giant statues and oh, it's Rob and Sandra.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that they're going to have some sort of a reveal. I don't think that we're going to keep it a secret the whole season.
Do they get to vote?
I don't know. That's been certainly theorized. Now, there are now going to be 11 people on the jury. Do you think that helps the case that they might vote or hurts the case that we already have a ton of votes?
Well, I think legally they shouldn't have the right to vote because they're kind of part of production and part of the game mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my lawyer brain is like, this would be kind of a violation of game show rules because they've had a hand in the game itself. They're not playing it, but they've handed out idols. They've determined portions of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure that falls within
now, again,
proper
this is
gaming rules.
Not my area of expertise, but, you know, on shows like The Voice or Dancing with the Stars, like, aren't there judges that are sort of like, you know, there's fans are voting, but then there's also judges. I mean, I don't know what the legality of, what the game show rules are.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I really don't think they can vote. I think ethically it would be an issue. Mm-hmm. Not that Survivor is about ethics or anything. But my lawyer brain's like, there's just no way. Because they've had the opportunity to really influence the game, though they're not being contestants. Because they're there and they're giving advice and counseling, you know.
Yeah.
In a manner that I think can sway. And they're in there getting inside information that others aren't privy to.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't think they'll get a vote.
Right. For like if Janet got to the end, you feel like that, you know, Rob and Sandra would say like, oh, yeah, she was able to, you know, suss out the right answer for the test. So that's, you know, a reason why she should win.
I think they're probably going to go home. It's the merge. Sandra's got an injury.
They're going to go home.
Yeah, I think they're going to maybe because they're not really playing. They're just there for a portion. Maybe they just get some time before they return for their next big season.
Yeah, maybe. I think they're going to be there the whole time.
Do you?
Okay. I think so.
I don't know. I haven't really followed it, but I'm not a fan of the twist. I don't see the point of it at all.
You don't invest in a 24-foot head for 19 days.
I just hope at the finale, they show those being delivered to their respective front yards.
Yeah, that would be good.
That would be so awesome if they had Jeff, like, for a Christmas present. They did a little clip where he brings this giant wrapped head of Boston Rob. you know, not to like Lex's house or something.
No, definitely not. Kevin, a lot of people were asking about how, if you were on the Island of the Idols, who would it be? Would it be you and Tony?
Well, I think we once talked about this as a sitcom where Tony's my bailiff and we're neighbors or something.
Yeah.
So I think Tony and I on the Island of the Idols would be comedy gold for people.
Mm-hmm.
But there would be extra costs because of the llama interpreter that would be needed.
Yeah.
There would be, you know, who else could be good on that? I mean, Spencer and I would be good on there.
Yeah, you and Spencer would be good. I saw a thread on Reddit recently that was saying that Cass and Spencer need to both play again together. That we need to see these two return for a third time together. Now, the last time you and I were speaking, you said that you thought that you were you maybe had a third run in you. Do you feel that way still?
I don't know. I really feel dissociated from the game at this point. I feel like there's been enough new players come up that are their own archetypes, and especially women. We've had a lot of great characters and players come up that haven't had a second chance. So I kind of feel like they should get their opportunity before someone like me does. Mm-hmm. You know, I've played twice, quite frankly. There's only a few things I would need to do in the game to complete my Survivor experience.
Mm-hmm.
The main one being winning. And I'm not sure I could ever win.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I mean, I'm sure you feel the same. You get asked back or you get calls and you have to weigh that. Like, is it worth being away from my family, coming out of my world and back into that world, which we all know is quite a roller coaster to get on and off. So when you're so many years out, is it worth it? You know, personally, to go out there, maybe make $20,000 and sit on an island in Fiji for being voted out early or going on a vacation or something like that. And you, to me, at this point, it's not really, there's no cost benefit to doing so.
Yeah.
And, you know, my daughter's a little older now, so I'm, you know, it's an important time to be in her life.
Yeah.
And not be gone. So all these factors. So I personally don't think it's in the cards for me, you know.
I totally understand that. I really do. I think that you have to go because you love being out there. I think that that's really what it comes down to. If it's like, hey, you know, this is important to me, I would love to go and do it. And, you know, no matter, you know, how it turns out, sure, I'd love to win. I'd love to do well. But no matter how it turns out, I'm fine with, just the idea of like, I really love the idea of being out there as opposed to, hey, if I don't win, then it's not going to be worth it for me or come in, you know, in the top three. Then it's not going to be worth it because the game is so random. There's so many crazy advantages that, you know, you can get hit by any of these different things at all these different tribal councils. And there's very little that you can do to prepare for a lot of this stuff where, you know, you just have to be want to be out there.
Yeah. And you have to believe you're going to win. That was one of my flaws in Cambodia is I went out there and I had, you know, I knew everybody was gunning for me. I really didn't want to be out there. I had a lot going on personally.
Mm-hmm.
And the experience wasn't that great for me, you know, and it kind of left this taste in my mouth, like a big regret that, you know, I shouldn't have gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to have that again. In Cagayan, I went out there and I got into game mode and I honestly played that whole game thinking I could win. If I could just get to the end, I was convinced I could win that game, you know, that I knew if I got to the end, ever how I got there, I could figure out the argument that I needed to make. But I didn't ever feel that way in Cambodia. So when I look at a third time and playing, I just feel like there's so many pregame alliances now. I'm not really in that. I'm not really in the Survivor Club. You know, I don't go to events.
Yeah.
I don't make it part of my life. You know, I don't focus on Survivor it's more like something I did, you know. It's like I went backpacking when I was in college or something. I went on Survivor. It was fun. It was real. But the older I get and the further removed I am, I think mentally the better healthy spot to be in is to be like it's in this compartment. So every time they call you and say you want to play again, a lot of people get super nutted up about it. Oh, my God, I'm going back, you know, and they start strategizing. They start calling people. And that's just a very unhealthy position to be in.
Yeah.
In my opinion, because you start playing the game and the game is not good for your mental health.
No,
it's not. every time they call you, it's almost like abusive because you start playing the game and then people start calling you, right? Hey, did you get a call? Did you get a call?
Mm-hmm.
You know, me and you to the end, me and you to the end, you know, and you have to start that and then it disrupts your daily life.
Right.
So to me, that's just an abyss I don't really want to jump back into.
Mm-hmm.
And is it worth $1 million at this point? The odds of getting to the end versus what you lose personally when you get invested and then don't go far.
Yeah.
It's not really worth it.
You're and making I, a lot of sense, Cass.
I would caution a lot of people who are living the survivor life, or, you know, contestants who are just waiting for that call that, you know, they're going to call you if you're a character. They're going to call you every year and they're going to ask you and then they're going to leave you hanging. You know, or they'll be like, hey, you know, next year or whatever. So, you know, you're at the mercy of them. And it's just not somewhere I like to be waiting to be kind of a pawn in a game.
Right.
And a numbers draw for them. So, yeah, if that makes any sense. And I think people who have played understand that. And I think we lose a lot of our personal lives and it damages relationships if we don't get control over that. And we live with this, I got to play again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's been a long time.
Yeah.
It's almost like being like an Olympic athlete and being like, okay, in 4 more years, can I make it back to the marathon?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and I don't plan to.
Do you feel like that you wish you didn't go back the second time?
My two regrets in Survivor, in hindsight, are in Cagayan, I wanted to get rid of Tasha early in the Brains tribe. Because I saw some stuff that was going on and I saw that she was a smart player and I wanted to get rid of her. And people told me, you know, that would be a bad person to target, blah, blah, blah. So I've always kind of, that was my gut instinct and I didn't go with it. And I feel like that has affected my Survivor career in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And then at Second Chances, I wish I would have, when they called my name, told Jeff, please just take T-Bird in my place because she's not going to get another spot. I love her and I'd like to see her play again as a fan. And I know they would have called me back at a time when it was better for me without playing with a bunch of people I'd played with before, many factors. So I wish in hindsight that I had done that.
Yeah. So you really got caught up where you didn't really want to go the second time. It wasn't a great time, but they said, hey, Cass, we got this vote that you're going to let the fans down, that, hey, like, you know, if it's not now, I don't know when we're going to do another season. So this is really it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of, you know, you feel like, hey, this is it. This is, and you're honored. You're like, wow,
yeah.
I'm part of Survivor. I'm a, you know, an all-star or a second chancer or something.
Mm-hmm.
So you do get caught up in all that, but I don't think I would so easily be susceptible to that anymore.
Yeah. Wow. And what a move it would have been to say, hey, take T-Bird. Was that even a thought in your mind, or that's something that's come to you after the fact?
It kind of came to me that evening.
Yeah.
Because I thought she was going to play. And I think I did your podcast and said, I think T-Bird's going to win the whole thing when we were doing the pandering for votes.
Yeah.
And I really felt like she was a sleeper and someone I wanted to see play again. So when she didn't get picked, and it all happened very quickly if you were there, like who didn't get picked, who did get picked. You know, I had Jim Rice sitting right behind me. You know, people we thought might get in, not getting in. And it was all kind of a whirlwind. And then they sat me right next to Abby. And I thought, oh, my God, one of us is getting in and one isn't because we're two villain people.
Yeah.
So then we got in, you know, and it's overwhelming. You see people that, you know, you can Terry Deeds. And at the time I, you know, I'd had a crush on Savage way back when. Mm-hmm. So I was like, ooh, look at me, you know, so.
Yeah.
So, I think you get caught up in the moment, but in hindsight, that would have been the better move for me within my Survivor lexicon.
Yeah.
Right. And then maybe come back for a different game.
Yeah. That's wild. You know, it's interesting to hear because there's so many people that would, you know, kill to be in that spot of, you know, almost every single person that plays the game, and many of them are not in consideration to come back, saying like, I can't believe you would get invited back and not, you know, be wanting to do it for a third time, or talk about going and if you have the chance to go and not going. So I appreciate you sharing all that with us, Cass.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody should be thinking that way. But I understand for a lot of people, it's the biggest thing that ever happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's so public and none of us are trained to deal with social media or anything prior to being thrust out into this world that Survivor kind of plunges you into, it can become all consuming for people. And I mean, the healthiest thing I've ever done is just stop following anything Survivor.
Well, I appreciate you still coming and talking with me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like, you know, I watched the show. I missed last week. I had to go pay for gall darn CBS access to watch it.
Yeah.
I feel like we should get CBS All Access free for life if we were a contestant.
Shouldn't they give you a lifetime subscription?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to pay for mine. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel this is something we need. Maybe we should get a union together.
Yeah.
And say, hey, there's only, what, 600 of us?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you give us all free CBS All Access?
We'll band together. Do we have any other demands?
I don't think so. I'm very proud of Jeff for evolving a bit.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll start small. I mean, baby steps. Cass, Noah has a question. Who's in the best position to cause chaos at the merge?
The best position to do so is probably Dean.
Dean. Chaos Dean.
Destructive Dean.
Destructive Dean. Yeah. What about Chaos Kowalski? Could he go with the last name?
Is that his last name?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he could. I mean, he's Detective Dean.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he can blow a lot of stuff up.
Okay.
That's always the dangerous person who everybody's been voting against, really has no true allies and has some information.
Yeah. Simon wants to ask you so many questions. My main one being, are there any players on this season that you'd enjoy taunting as much as you enjoyed taunting Spencer?
Oh, I think my taunting days are over. I mean,
you're so involved now, Cass. You too, like Jeff.
You know what it is? Becoming a professor at college, I now deal and I teach engineers, which are, you know, I'll have 60 students and they'll be 57 will be young men. So I have a whole new insight. Whereas previously when I was just a lawyer dealing with conflict all the time and usually being, you know, in arguments.
Yeah.
Now I'm like an educator and there's no conflict. You just kind of go in and teach and answer questions and I'm a mentor and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my perspectives and where I come from when looking at younger people is very different. I had no prior relationships with 21-year-old people being an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't in my day-to-day life. But now I meet people from all walks of life and, you know, I have to, when I'm teaching, try to contemplate where are these people coming from that I'm trying to teach a concept to. They're all from a different background. So I think this career change for me has given me a lot more self-awareness, which Survivor, of course, gave me a huge amount of self-awareness. You know, when you have to look at yourself on TV and behaviors you've done. And then just being able to see and associate with a more diverse group has really just changed me in many ways. So I think if I got cast right now for my first season, I probably wouldn't have the cutthroat drive I had my first season, but I'd have a much better social game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. I think if I did play again, you'd see a totally different person.
Cass, what advice do you have for Survivor players or people that are listening in terms of their work or their home lives? What have you learned about dealing with 21-year-olds?
Well, they're not terrible people. You know, I mean, Spencer, you know, no, I mean, I think it's just being exposed to more people, not just age wise, but just a whole different perspective on relating to people.
Mm-hmm.
When you're an attorney, especially a plaintiff's attorney, like I am and was, you're constantly having to fight for your client. Whereas if you're a teacher, you're trying to help someone. So it's, you know, and not that as an attorney, you're not helping.
You're like Robin Sandra.
No, no. No, they're just there for a check. Well, Survivor already ruined my life and I'm associated with it forever. So I might as well make a few extra bucks, I think I'm hoping that's, I feel like Sandra, yeah. I think she's brilliant because she's just like, yeah, I'm the queen, whatever. How much you want to pay me to do what? All right. You know, and I feel like she's the most brilliant Survivor player ever because she continues to capitalize on this.
Yeah.
And has never been the stereotypical Survivor winner or player.
Mm-hmm.
Yet she's so well known and CBS is forced to continue to include her.
Mm-hmm.
So she's the most brilliant player in that term.
The system.
She has. Whereas Rob, I think, you know, he makes an effort of having a social media empire and mm-hmm. poker playing and all of this stuff. Whereas Sandra's just like, I just went back to work, you know, raising my family. Oh, people like me. Maybe I should get on this social media thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yeah.
Okay.
I like it.
Cass, I have a question for you from Derek. Derek Winchester says, hey, Cass, I remember running into you in Universal Studios Harry Potter World, Florida. She was generous and kind enough to take a picture with me. Can't wait to hear her perspective on all of this. Cass, do you get recognized often?
I do, surprisingly.
Yeah.
I'm always shocked, especially this far out. I remember this young man because we were at one. I don't know if you've been to one of these Harry Potter worlds where you buy the wand and you stand mm-hmm. somewhere and you kind of do a spell.
Okay.
And my daughter was doing that. It was for her 11th birthday. We went there and this guy came up and was like, Chaos, Chaos!
Mm-hmm.
Was very excited. But it's always shocking when you're just, you know, not a celebrity or anything and people come up. And I was recently at Austin City Limits Music Festival.
Okay.
And I went, Lizzo is very popular.
Yes.
Singer right now.
Yes.
And we were trying to get to Lizzo and there's 8 stages at this festival. And she was on a smaller stage cause she had just blown up. And I was in this sea of people trying to get to Lizzo, who was one of the few acts I really wanted to get to. But there were like 60,000 people trying to get to this smaller venue. So we actually had decided to swim upstream and get out
because mm-hmm.
it was just, you know, wall to wall people. And we had our 11-year-old with us. And this in that sea was this lady and she just this young woman. She's like, oh, my God, Cass, what are you doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And she was freaking out about it in a sea of Lizzo fans.
Yeah. I think you could say that Lizzo found you and she was a big Chaos Cass fan.
No. But I probably get recognized, you know, when I'm out in airports always.
Yeah.
I'm sure you get that too.
Not really. But it's been a long time since anybody actually spots me. It's usually people that they listen to. If they listen to the podcast, sometimes I get spotted by somebody who's a podcast listener. But for, you know, somebody who was remembers me from the show, that's rare. But I do feel like that when it would happen, like airports, like Las Vegas, like the places
yeah.
where there's a lot of people from all over.
Yeah. And I generally have a student or two each semester that either is a fan or their parents are a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I have one right now who calls me Crazy Cass all the time because that's what his parents call me.
Yeah.
Is
he going to fail?
After those comments,
yes.
I'm not at liberty to discuss students'
yeah.
grades. There's some kind of laws about that.
Okay.
But I do get, I'm always surprised because I feel like it's been so long.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's only been 4 years since you last played.
But think of all the images and people who go through our lives on
yeah.
screens. And I didn't get a lot of screen time in Cambodia.
Mm, yeah. I mean, you were there. You were Casanova. Kumbaya Cass.
Yeah. So
let me just ask you about this. I watched this morning and I'm watching you in the gross food eating competition. And
mm-hmm.
I saw you really struggling with, I forget whatever the first thing was that they were trying to get you to eat. And then you were really struggling with the pig snout. Certainly not like Papa Smurf once upon a time. But were you potentially trying to throw the challenge? Was there any part of you that was saying, hey, I'm not going to give this my all because this would actually somehow behoove me to go to this tribal council?
I wasn't trying to throw the challenge, but Sierra and I had discussed because she said she cannot handle gross food challenges at all, that we didn't really need to win.
Yeah.
So we didn't need to overextend ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That we needed to, you know, put a valid effort in, but there's no point in, you know, deep throating a balut with the shell on to win a challenge.
You were going to vote out Spencer, then, you know.
Well, it was going to be Woo. Yeah. Either way, it was going to be Woo.
It was going to be somebody you wanted to get rid of either way.
Yeah. So I felt like, you know, especially I'm not even sure, they aired the part, but when the second one, when it was between me and Tasha, and she said, "I'm so fueled by hate right now, Jeff."
No, I don't think that was in the episode.
And you know, she came at me like a raging bull there, and I just was like, okay. And then she popped that whole thing in her mouth, and I was like, go for it, girl.
Yeah, you got this.
Because I'm getting rid of your buddy tonight. You're only the guy. Yeah. So you voted for him to win Kagiyan, so we know you. He likes you, and you like him. So.
Mm-hmm.
Adios, Woolicious.
Yeah.
So, we weren't trying to throw it, but Sierra and I had definitely talked about how it was not our best challenge. I mean, not that I'm a challenge beast anyway.
Yeah.
But we weren't too concerned.
Cass, I'm going to talk to Sierra this weekend. I'm very excited. I haven't done an interview with her in a very long time. What's a question that I should ask Sierra?
Ask her if she still has her booty underwear.
That
if she wore them, that's probably inappropriate, right?
Can I just play you the audio clip of you, or we don't want to go down
you
this
can.
Road?
You can ask that. You can say, Cass has a question. Did she wear her booty underwear this Halloween?
Okay.
Because we were briefly roommates in Ponderosa.
Yes.
Before Hurricane Abby hit.
And then what happened? Then who disrupted? Then she got Abby, or you got Abby?
She got Abby. Wigglesworth did not want to room with anybody. Then she only wanted to room with Kimmy, but Kimmy hadn't come out of the game yet.
Yeah.
And then someone was going to have, she had a room with like a queen or king size bed. And everyone said, well, two people need to go in that room because we're now doubling down. And Sierra and I had already, we had been roommates. And Wiggs said, I don't want to room with Abby and I don't want to room with Sierra, but I'll room with Cass. So I ended up with Wigglesworth as my roommate, and Sierra and Abby ended up in the room with the king size bed.
Okay.
Cause we were just like, oh my God, people, we're adults, you know? but then I got to be the witness to the blooming relationship of Wigglesworth and Joe.
Yes. Okay. But that was, you know, a fleeting thing. Because Joe went on to find true love with a different Sierra.
Right. No, but it was Wiggs and Joe, though, not Sierra.
No, I know. It was fleeting. Oh, yeah. It was fleeting. It didn't last.
Oh, yeah. Is he married now?
They're engaged. I'm not sure when the wedding is.
Yeah. Okay. Because he cut his hair. He's got to grow it out again before the wedding.
Yeah. Did you think that was a mistake when Joe cut his hair after this last season?
No, I thought the man bun was a mistake.
That was a mistake. You know, you played, when I was watching you, you played with Joe and of course with Kelly. Did you have any thoughts on watching them last season?
No, I mean, I felt like I hate when they call returnees and then they put them with a bunch of newbies because I think it's not a fair shot for anyone.
Yeah.
And that newbies are smarter now and they're going to get rid of returnees.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't feel it was a very fair way to go or that whole season I didn't like that island and all that. I don't like that.
Yeah. Okay.
So I did appreciate them showing the Chris Underwood strategic decision making course.
Yes.
I was like, that was kind of random. They're just trying to fix that error.
They're trying to hype him up, I guess.
So, yeah.
Okay. But,
I mean, I think they feel like they got a lot of backlash for that, which anyone could have predicted. If you're going to send the whole jury to an island and send one person back, what deal are you going to make when you get there?
Mm-hmm.
Whoever gets back in wins, no matter what.
Yeah.
That's what I would be doing the whole time I'm there. Mm-hmm. Promising my vote and getting a vote in return. And they're all on the jury. So, you know,
makes sense.
But we did get a whole season of Reem out of that. So there's that.
Were you as much of a fan of Reem as I was?
I want to go skateboarding and smoke some pot with Reem.
Whoa.
Not in Texas because it's illegal.
Yeah, not there. Yeah.
I could see.
Are you?
Yeah. All right. Well, have you had any contact with her?
No, I don't really contact people in the Survivor world.
All right, I can get you her number.
Oh, that's okay. Okay. I think we're friends on Facebook or something.
Okay. Hudson wants to know, do you have any new exchange student stories? That was such a big hit the last time you and I spoke that you told the whole story about your exchange student.
Oh, yeah. We do not have one. We have a 12-year-old now, and that is enough stress.
That's enough.
A 12-year-old girl. And maybe next year we've talked about it, but we like to take a year or so off especially when we've had such a traumatic experience. So we're in that stage right now.
Okay. Donna Martello Kuratic says, have you read any good books lately?
Have I read any good books? That's an interesting question. I do. I read like a book a week, but I can't say I would recommend.
What do you normally read? Fiction or nonfiction?
Fiction. Yes. I'm trying to finish the book that I assigned for my class to read this semester right now because it's nonfiction.
Okay.
But I usually read fiction. I like to just escape and not have to think.
Do you ever trade book recommendations with Stephen Fishback?
I do not. I think he's a little bit more evolved than me.
Okay. Well, what do you read?
I just read mainstream fiction.
Mainstream fiction. Okay.
And yeah. He reads. Maybe not New York Times, you know, where he's more like literary fiction or, you know, he's got the prose down.
Yeah.
Right. And I just want to be entertained and, you know, I think it's a different place to come from.
Okay, Cass, I have one more question for you from Tovey Paul, who says, hi, Cass, is there anyone you want to bestow the gift of freedom rockets upon this season?
Freedom rockets?
Yes.
I'm not sure.
Those would be the birds that you have flipped.
Days.
Yes.
In this season? No, I don't think anybody's worthy at this point.
Okay. Is that anybody?
Nobody's really done anything horrific or egregious, right? Mm-hmm. I like this cast. I kind of like something about everybody. I'm a little indifferent.
Dan could warrant some a couple of freedom rockets.
Well, I think Dan, I mean, again, he's going to come away from this with a whole different perspective of himself that he's probably never received.
Yeah, you would hope.
And I would think it's very damaging to him and his family to be, you know, having to learn this or realize this in this realm. So I actually feel bad for him because I don't think he's a bad guy. You know, I think he just has personal behaviors that other people are uncomfortable with. I don't think he's doing it to be malicious or pervy or anything. I just think he comes from a different place than other people.
Okay. I don't want to end on that note. I want to let's find something better to end on.
Okay, how about the mergeitis that this season has had, where everybody
itis?
Yeah, where everybody. I think I heard it like three times in this episode. I just want to make the merge. Mm-hmm. I can't stand that. If you're gonna go on the game, don't put these marks in there. Just go and win.
Yes.
Like, so I was like, I wrote it down here that everybody has merge-itis. They just want to make the merge. And that's not Survivor. That's having a case of merge-itis.
Did you give anything else, any thought in terms of writing notes about it?
Let's see.
I love it when the guests have notes.
I have a lot of notes. The fire-making thing was very interesting because we saw some conflict between Jamal and Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of started putting pluses and negatives by each scene that we were given for a player. So like the intro scene, I had a negative Missy. The second scene, I had a plus Aaron. Then I had two negative Jamals, one with Kelly and one with Nora.
So who had the most pluses?
Dan had a minus. Janet had a lot of hearts because I liked what she was saying. I think Aaron had the most pluses for me. He just had two.
Yeah.
I had a lot of minuses this episode.
Yeah, I did too. Cass, do you agree with Sandra that a woman will win the season?
I do not.
You do not? Okay. Do you have a winner prediction?
I think it's Aaron. I think we've seen positive stuff.
Wow.
And the socks, when I saw the socks, when he hadn't really had any anything come up, and then all of a sudden he had the socks, I was like, why are they showing us this if this guy doesn't go far? This is going to be part of his jury speech.
Yeah.
I don't know why I know that Jeff loves family stuff, and to show us his kid's face and then have him be the loser would be crushing for an elementary school child.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Jeff is very hypersensitive to family issues.
Yeah.
So that the socks just made me think there's no way they would put this poor kid face on a sock on TV and make a point of it if the dad doesn't win. There's no value added in doing that.
What about Sandra said I'm telling you, I bet a woman's going to win. And then Rob said, hey, I was born at night. But would they show Rob and Sandra both being so wrong with that, that they both are in agreement? A woman's definitely going to win the season. It seems like that that has been, I mean, especially after last night's episode, a theme of the season, strong women.
Yes.
Okay. All right. It's something interesting to watch for. Look, it's going to be fun to follow.
I just think you don't put a kid's face on TV and then show them get crushed with their dad losing.
And what if he goes far? That's the only thing? They can't show his socks if his dad doesn't win?
In elementary school, there's no such thing as fourth place. You win or you don't.
I'm under the notion that there are nothing but participation trophies for kids now. So that if just to be on the show, you're a winner.
Not in this generation. Not in Texas, man.
Oh, man.
Texas takes this seriously.
Okay. Well, Cass, thank you again for being so generous with your time, sharing so much with us. That I hope it's coming through. Just how happy I am to always talk to you, Cass.
It's always fun, and I'm glad we had a big gap because I feel like it's more fun.
Yeah.
You know, when it's not every season or, you know, it's kind of like you pop up out of nowhere. Like, hey, Cass, you want a podcast? Oh, OK.
OK. Yeah. How many years should I wait to call you again, Cass? Tell me now. Well, I'll remember.
I can't podcast about next season because I'm fairly well spoiled.
OK.
So that would be not a fun thing to do.
OK.
You know, because I can't keep my mouth shut.
You got it. So wait 1 year to call you or one plus years?
Yeah, like a year or so. You can always check in.
That was the last time we talked. It was the second week of Survivor David versus Goliath.
Okay. So, yeah, that seems to be our thing.
So like 13 months from now, we'll talk during Survivor 41.
Yeah, maybe we'll do like the merge episode or something.
Okay. All right. So
if they're still on the air, you know,
we'll see. All right. So Chaos Cass, check her out on the merge episode of Survivor 41 coming in November of 2020. This is going to be a very exciting month. A lot of people always looking, counting down to November 2020 because I guess they're looking forward to Cass coming back on the podcast. And so you can follow Cass on Twitter, although Cass does not tweet much.
No, you know, I've really cut back on the Survivor stuff.
Do the thing where you tweet and then delete it?
I do occasionally.
Okay. All right. But you never know when it's going to happen.
I don't really watch Survivor on time anymore.
Oh, you're time shifted.
So like, you know, it's not as relevant to be like tweeting the next morning.
Mm-hmm. What about, I know you're in your Survivor group. Does Mr. Cass or your daughter, Sarah, do they watch Survivor with you?
Mr. Cass watches.
Yes.
When we watch, you know, conventional time or something. But no, my daughter hates Survivor.
Oh, but did she ever like it, or she doesn't like it because you were on it?
She doesn't like it because it took me away for 2 summers. And then whenever we would travel, especially after that first season, people would stop and want to talk about it. And it still happens.
Yeah.
So it's more about kids associating a negative, like this is taking my mom away from me.
Yeah.
And then why are people interested in my mom?
Yes. Okay. I never thought about it like that.
She's actually come around now that it's middle school and people know. Where last year when I got a phone call and we talked about it as a family, she's like, oh yeah, you should go. You could go. You know, that might be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we might be entering the realm of it's cool to do it.
Everything old is new.
Yeah. And on returning, that is one thing I told my family, that it would be their decision, you know, if I went back.
Mm.
Okay. So as you know, if everybody wanted to get rid of me or something.
All right.
So anyway,
Cass, thank you again so much. Anything you want to tell people to check out? I know that you don't have a ton of stuff online.
No, I'm really not here for self-promotion, Rob. I'm just here because it's fun, right? To do this every now and then.
That's what touches me the most.
I have thought about writing, and I've outlined a little short story I want to write called Passionate Ponderosa, and it would be a fan fiction about the Ponderosa at Cambodia. Totally fictional with fictional characters.
Okay.
How do you think that would go over with the viewers?
With the
listeners.
The fans?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
like, are these like original characters, or this is you're writing like some sort of a Survivor fan fiction?
It would be kind of like they would be original, but based on maybe people I've met.
I think it would do very well.
Because my thought is there's this middle-aged woman that goes and is the mayor of Ponderosa. And she's a total villain. And she decides she's going to just home wreck the place and just like have affairs with every single. She has like a goal to have an affair with every single person at Ponderosa.
Yes.
Male or female. Doesn't matter. Do you think that would go over well?
What would the name of the story be?
It would be like Passion at Ponderosa.
Passion at Ponderosa. I think you got a hit.
You think?
I think so.
It would be written in jest, but, you know, something. I'm thinking along those lines. So maybe next time I come on, I'll have something to promote.
Okay. We can't wait. and then if you could talk about it on Stephen Fishback's literary podcast, Paraphrase, where he talks to authors.
Oh, my God. This is like a double whammy.
Yeah. You could do two podcasts then.
But I've just been thinking, like, we can't write about our time on Survivor, but what if we totally parody it? Yeah. Is that allowed? That is allowed.
I think that you, I don't know if you could say Ponderosa. I think you might have to like make up some other new thing.
I will. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, we can't wait, Kath. Thank you, Kath. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Talk to you next year. All right, there you have it. Chaos Cast back here on the podcast, and really thrilled to get to catch up with Cass. I have a real affinity for people that come back and talk to me, you know, year after year and through all the time. You know, there are some people that come through the podcast and are a little bit of a flash in the pan, and then there are other people who have been with me and having fun on the podcast for many, many years now. And I don't know, other than the chance to get to talk about Survivor with me, really what's in it for the guests. So I really appreciate that they get to come on and have some fun and talk with me. And it's always great to catch up with one of the greats, Cass McEwen, here on the podcast. So that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. Looking forward to catching up with Sierra Easton, who I haven't talked to in a very long time. We've been trading some messages. She seems excited to talk about some Survivor after it's been a couple of years since Survivor Game Changer. So let's hear what she has to think about everything that's going on in this season. Of course, get your feedback questions in for that show. We're gonna have the Wiggle Room coming up on Monday as well. So lots of stuff going on. And of course, don't forget about the shows on the reality TV wrap ups, including Why Jack Lost and the RHAP B&B with Mary Holland this weekend, not to mention the Purple Pants podcast and the Challenge wrap up and everything that we've got going on in our Sequester coverage as well, all on reality TV wrap ups. Thank you again so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.